everybody, welcome to the Dimeback Podcast. I'm Tyler Wilkinson. I'm joined today by Russ Steinberg.
I'm Russ.
And Peter Bard.
Hey.
And Megan Bard.
Hello again.
And Kevin Meacham.
Are you guys not Russ?
Several people are Russ, including Russ.
I am still Russ.
I'm never Russ.
The Dimeback Podcast is proudly brought to you by J. Timothy's Tavern in Plainfield, Connecticut. We're going to omit the ad today, I think, only because this is going to be a long episode because we're talking to Joe D'Ambrosio, the longtime voice of Connecticut basketball, football, hockey. I don't know what else does he call it, dog shows. So I hope you enjoy our interview with Joe D. First things first, I mean, let's...
Do you want to be our football writer?
Yeah, let's get to the nuts and bolts of this. How are you enjoying your first day as the permanent host of the Dimeback Podcast?
It's tremendous. It's a, you know, ever since I was a kid, I've wanted to be the permanent host of the Dimeback Podcast. So this is working out great.
Perfect. So I guess in all seriousness, you know, you're going through a little bit of a career transition after, is it 26 years calling you?
26 years, yeah.
What's it sort of been like for you, I guess, like emotionally, you know, having to switch course at this point?
It took a while, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty good with it now. The only bad part about what I do is I'm up at 3 a.m. in the middle of the night. I used to say 3 a.m. in the morning, but that's bullshit. That's not morning. That's middle of the night.
That's the middle of the night.
Other than that, I'm having fun. It's not just sports. It's co-hosting with Ray Dunaway on WTIC. And, you know, I mean, I love politics. I like a lot of the stuff we talk about. And Ray's awesome. So, you know, I mean, is it exactly what I want to be doing? No, I think everybody knows what I want to be doing, but... unfortunately, that wasn't going to take place.
I mean, honestly, we're not over it yet, so it's okay.
I'm still very mad about this. Like, I have still not resolved, like, am I even going to listen this season? Joe, can you tell us who is the person standing in between you and doing this? Because we'll fight them.
You know what?
We'll run up a crew right now. We'll go to their house. I am not
I appreciate
kidding.
It a great deal, but it's probably higher up the Entercom food chain than even I know about. So I don't think there's any one person's house that we can storm in this matter.
Joe, I don't want to like tell tales out of school here, but from sort of the mechanics of how we understand this is you're basically still under contract with TIC, correct? And UConn, or essentially there was a lack of agreement between the two parties to release you of that, to bring you over. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Well, there was no agreement. WTIC and Entercom, who's the new owners, since November, had an option year on my contract, and they exercised it because they basically did not want me walking across the street to their big rival, who was iHeart. You know, there was no negotiations as far as what would have been the terms. I don't know what WTIC would have requested. I'm going to guess it was a lot that iHeart, which is a company that's in bankruptcy, wasn't going to do. And frankly, to be honest with you guys and girls, I don't really blame them for not, you know, wanting to empty the coffers. That's just the way the business is nowadays. So, you know, when the announcement came out in the middle of February, I had a pretty good sense then that my days were numbered.
So, I mean, I feel like I have to ask the question that is probably on everyone's mind when they hear it was an extra year on your contract. I mean, a year down the road, I mean, do you know, would you be open to reuniting?
I don't know. Mike Crispino is a very good broadcaster. I would just, you know, this is not Ernie Harwell with the Tigers by any stretch of the imagination, where Bo Schembechler canned him, and then a year later, Ernie went back.
Why not?
You know,
why isn't it
I'm gonna wait and see how I feel after a year. If I you know, want to still keep getting up at 3 a.m., I would say the chances of me going back to UConn, to be honest, are slim and none. It would have to take something out of the ordinary for that to happen.
That's our middle name.
And I don't foresee that happening.
Well,
so. Challenge accepted.
Joe, you did a nice piece with Dom in the Current that I read right before we did this podcast over again too. But in it, you mentioned John Sterling, who's in his 80s, who's still calling games for the Yankees. I mean, how long do you want to be in this business for? I mean, is this something, do you see an end in sight, or are you just going to go until your voice gives out?
Well, I didn't see an end in sight till this started.
Yeah.
And now, you know, till this podcast started.
Yep.
And then
now you're done. We pushed you out of the business.
I can see the stop sign right in front. No, I want to work until, I'm not able to do it at the level that I think I'm doing it at. You know, I had said to Dom, and I've said to anybody who I've talked to about this, that, you know, I could tell, when I know that I'm not doing as good a job as I have done before, or I think I've done before, then I would not stay there just to keep doing the job. But right now, you know, knock on wood, I feel good. I still love my work. I think, you know, my calls, despite what some people might think, are as good as they've been. So, you know, why not keep doing it?
Who thinks they're not as good as they've been? That's insane to me.
I that's for another podcast.
Anytime you want to come back and just assail your critics, you know, you're open to it.
No, I'm not. There's a lot of people in this business who are thin-skinned. I'm not going to.
Fair enough.
I'm not going to go there.
There certainly are. All right. How about this? Are you going to be watching the games on TV this year? Like, how is that going to be a weird experience?
I'm going to go to the games and cover them. I mean, I need sound for my morning sportscasts on WTIC.
Okay.
So I'll go to football, I'll go to basketball, and I'll go to women's games, which I haven't been going to. I'll go to hockey. I'm not looking forward to having to sit where the rest of the media sits for basketball at Gimple.
Not great.
I'm not going to lie to you on that one.
That's going to be a seat in the house, Joe.
Bring binoculars.
Yeah. That's going to be a bit of an adjustment. But, you know, yes, I'm still going to go to games. I'm still going to cover them. I'm still going to hope that they do well. There's no reason not to.
If I call you during the game, will you just, like, call it to me over the phone and I can pretend? that it's still the radio?
I believe there's a rights issue with that.
You don't have to tell me. This is just you and me.
Okay, all right. Well, if it's just us and you're not putting it over the air, yeah, I'll give you one. I'll give you one bit of play-by-play.
Nice.
Just one.
It's amazing.
Joe, I feel like the, you know, from a fan's perspective, which we all are on this podcast, you know, like your departure is just sort of the latest in a trend of sort of the... I don't know, like, yeah, like the traditional parts of UConn fandom as we grew up with it, like going away slowly. I mean, do you feel that way too?
I think there's something to be said for that. I think it's a changing time, and I think that some things have been changed for the sake of change. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's not so good, but I don't think That's a completely inaccurate statement by any stretch.
I mean, you mentioned earlier, you know, that the price to maybe release you from the contract might have been prohibitive, but also, you know, that we all know that UConn made the switch from TIC to iHeart, you know, because it was monetary reasons, because they're very, you know, need to be conscious of every penny at this point. And I can't help but connect the dots and be like, so the move from the Big East essentially to the AAC, like, you can tie that directly to your departure at this point. You know what I mean? And that's,
well, I mean,
there's a straight line between all of these changes in my mind.
You could, but I mean, look, the school wanted off WTIC. They wanted to go to an all sports station. There may be other reasons that they wanted off WTIC. I'll let you all read between the lines.
I won't ask my next question then, because that was it.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, whatever the reasons were, they decided to make the switch. And the thing that I find interesting is from talking to some of the people who used to work on the broadcast who are now over on working for iHeart. iHeart is basically the ones who are running the broadcasts. you know, when they were on WTIC, IMG ran the broadcasts. Right. But iHeart's done the hiring. I think iHeart's in charge of the formats and that kind of thing. So iHeart has much more control over the broadcasts than we had at WTIC in the 5 years or 6 years, whatever it was, that we were married to IMG.
What does that mean exactly? Like, what control of what exactly? Like, what kind?
Well,
of
I mean, they're hiring the announcers. They're paying the announcers. IMG paid the announcers, except for me, because I was under contract to TIC. And when the deal first took place, TIC said, "No, we'll keep paying Joe." Although IMG paid me for hockey and they paid me expenses and coaches shows and that kind of thing. But iHeart is the one who hired the announcers. All the announcers, they're supposedly, you know, doing their own formats as to how they format the broadcasts. I mean, in consultation with IMG, but iHeart is much more involved in that part of the broadcast than WTIC was.
Joe, one of the things I've always been curious about is just the level of preparation that you would go under to do these broadcasts. I mean, you know, they play Marathon Oil and you have to know all the guys' names, the pronunciations, everything like that. What was the process of preparing for each game for you?
I tell people if I had done that much work in school, I would have been a doctor or a lawyer.
And football, what a tragedy that would have been.
Yes, exactly. I would have been out on my ass in no time. I for basketball, it would be about 2 hours per game, maybe a little more for football because there's so many more players. Mm-hmm. It would be double that. And that includes, you know, logging on to ussportspages.com for football the week before a game and just, you know, seeing what was going on with the opponent. Like, you know, if it was this year and I was still doing the games, I would be already checking out stuff from UCF and Boise, you know, to kind of get a jump on things. So, and I had a gentleman in Virginia who does this for a lot of ESPN people, who for the last 2 years had done my spotting charts for football. I mean, I would fill in the particulars, but he would basically do the template with positions and numbers and stats and stuff. And then I would fill in my little, you know, my own little notes and the like. So it was about 4 hours a game for football, maybe a little more, and about 2 hours a game for basketball.
I guess we'll start with football. I mean, you mentioned you're following the teams this year. You're obviously covering them for the radio still. What is your, prediction of how the team will perform this season?
I think they're going to be better, but I don't know if the record's going to be any better. Mm-hmm. I think that the quality of play will be better in year two under Randy. I mean, you know, we're not telling stories here. He had a, you know, he had a hell of a rebuilding job after the disaster before him. Mm-hmm. So, and I just mean the immediate. I'm not referring to Coach Pasqualoni. I'm referring to the coach between Pasqualoni and Randy.
I'm not familiar with this guy. I don't remember that.
I blacked that out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, trust me, I wish I could have. I think, you know, you look at the schedule. I mean, look, starting with UCF, then going out to Boise. They haven't been a great road team in the last 6-7 years. I think if they win 4 games this year, if they improve by one, I think that's pretty good. I think next year, I think 2019, we'll see them really show improvement, and maybe contend for a bowl bid.
And what about men's basketball this season?
Well, I mean, people who are around the program are very encouraged by Danny Hurley. Let's be honest. I mean, last year was worse than the year before because there were so many blowout losses. I don't think you'll see as much of that this year by any stretch. I think, you know, without knowing who everybody brings back in the American yet, I haven't really looked at that. I think they'll be better, but does that equal a trip to the NCAA tournament? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, I don't know. You know, I think it. I think they're gonna have to steal a couple of wins. I think Jalen's gonna have to play great. And I think the bigs. I think the big men are gonna have to show a market improvement over last year.
Joe, do you have any sense of sort of, I guess, I mean, you sort of talked a little bit about this, the people sort of close to the program. From the outside, it seemed at the end of last year that everybody was kind of just like, had totally given up on things. Is that still, you know, do you feel like there's been a mood shift as far as that goes from like just within the players or you know, what you
see? From what I hear, yeah, absolutely, Megan. I think you'll see a whole new attitude this year. I don't think there's any question that things will be much different that way this year. But you know, other than Jalen, these kids really haven't won at UConn. Mm-mm. You know, and for Jalen, it was 1 year; it was his freshman year. You got to develop that culture of winning. You know, a couple of wins early in the season, it will go a long way toward building this team's confidence.
Joe, speaking of culture of winning, I mean, you have a championship ring from the 2014 season, right?
Well, actually, no, we didn't get rings.
You didn't get a ring
for 2014.
Well, now I'm mad about a whole other thing, but
we got rings. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we got them. Yeah. We got those blogging championships. But you know, you were right there throughout Kevin Ollie's whole tenure. I mean, what do you think went wrong? I mean, how did the guy who won that championship end up sort of flaming out so hard at the end of this past season?
I think he got discouraged. I think he got frustrated with the lack of improvement in guys. And whether you want to, you know, whatever the reason for that is, I'm not quite sure why guys didn't get better. But I just, you know, I mean, I think it was kind of a gradual decline the last 2 years. Because don't forget, they won in 14. They won the conference in 16. But look, let's be honest, Jalen doesn't hit a 65-70 footer. They probably don't even go to the NCAA tournament that year. And that would be 4 straight years without the NCAA tournament. You know, then they had the injuries in 17, and then in 18, they just never meshed. You know, they're trying to – second straight year, they're trying to blend a lot of new people together, and it just didn't work out. I was a little surprised, guys, it wasn't better last year, and that took me by surprise.
It got hard to watch towards the end. Yeah. Like, it really – from a – I mean, I've been watching games my entire life, and I'm – you know, I start like remembering them since the late 80s. Like this was a hard to watch team.
It was hard to broadcast at times too, Megan.
You couldn't even.
You
turn
know,
it
there's
off.
Only there's only so much you could. You know, the good thing about radio is whether it's a 20-point win or a 20-point loss, the play-by-play guy's got to keep talking. It's the color commentator who's got to come up with stuff. Nobody's got a tougher job in the media than Deb Fisk.
Yeah.
Try to
right.
do it. Yeah. Yes. 50-60 point women's games. Nobody.
Oh gosh.
That's a very good point.
Thinking back to the beginning of last year, you know, they didn't start off all that bad. They beat Oregon, who they weren't a great team, but it's a, you know, a Pac-12 school, and the Michigan State, the next game, they were hanging right there with them for most of the way. At what point did you start to sense the attitude shift around the team?
Well, I think the Arkansas loss was the third game out in Portland Thanksgiving weekend was a telltale sign. And then the way they got smoked by Syracuse. I mean, Syracuse wasn't a very good team. And they got whipped by it. I don't think they ever led in that game. And that's the other thing is there were a lot, you know, those eight 20-point losses, I think most of those games they never led. You know, and that's that you fall into that habit. You know, you get behind by 5 and 7 and you get a sense of, oh, damn, we can't come back. That's hard to play in that circumstance. It's certainly hard to coach in that circumstance. Yeah. I would say the Syracuse game was a real sign. And then, you know, the other game that really screwed them was the double overtime loss at Tulsa. You know, was it double? I can't even. They all blend together.
Yeah, that game turned my mentions into a tire fire.
Oh. The loss at Tulsa, ugh. I thought, was a kick in the ass.
Did you just feel that because you were also in Tulsa?
let me tell you what. I love doing the games. I will not miss some of those road trips.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I was going to ask you about this. Going from a Big East travel schedule where it's like relatively compact to having to travel all over to Texas and Oklahoma and Florida, it just that's gotta be rough. From
you know, it's your perspective. Even though the flights are real comfortable, we had the charter planes were really nice. It's tough on the kids, but it was even tougher on the two old fogies doing the games on the radio. Even though I have the ability to fall asleep as soon as I get on a plane until we land, you know, when you're getting home 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning on these trips. It's not an easy travel league for UConn. No. It could be made easier if the AAC adopted travel partners like the Pac-12 does. Mm-hmm. You know, look, it could be UConn and Temple, Cincinnati and Memphis, Tulane and East Carolina, the two Florida schools, Wichita State and Tulsa, and the two Texas schools. I mean, how hard is that, right?
You can figure out.
Yeah, you can figure out your schedule.
I figured out your next job, Joe.
I'm all over it.
How are you at negotiating cable packages?
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the $64,000 question.
I hope it's more than that.
It's $64 million. Look, if it's not a good cable deal, this league's in big trouble. And, you know, God forbid it's not, and two schools like Memphis and, say, UCF bolt for somewhere else, then you guys got big troubles. Because, look, let's be honest, there's no money. They have no money now.
Nope.
So let's ask you the question we're all going to ask as a follow-up then. I mean, at what point do you think UConn should seriously explore moving its basketball programs back to the Big East and figuring out a different plan for football?
Well, I mean, the Big East has to want them, you know, and I don't think there's been any indication thus far that the Big East has, you know, has shown that they need UConn. I mean, would it be great? Would you like to bring UConn to Madison Square Garden? You know, but you'd have to add another team. Mm-hmm. You couldn't just do one team. You'd have to do two teams. Who else would they take?
Well, in a basketball format, why couldn't you do one team?
Because I think you want to have an even number. I think you want to have 12. You know, I just don't think you want to have 11, because then everybody's playing, you know, on a weekend, in a league weekend, instead of somebody having a bye. To me, it's always better. And that way you could go to two divisions if you want. It's easier to go to two divisions if you have an even number, if you have 12.
So
you don't have to have 12. I just think it would be better. But again, you know, we've seen no indication that the Big East is crawling to, you know, Hillside Road and Jim Calhoun Drive to beg for UConn to come back.
True. Hypothetically, what would you do with football in that situation?
Good question. I mean, look, you know, all these people who want to tell you they want to cancel, you know, put football down to division, to 1AA. I mean, you might as well close the doors, because that's an even bigger loss financially than, you know, what's going on now. You can't go to the MAC. You can't go to Conference USA. I don't know. I honestly don't know, you know, because if UConn ever pulled basketball out, the AAC would tell UConn, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way, you know, don't worry about the door hitting you on the ass on the way out. Yeah. So
it's just, you know, you mentioned the TV contract. I mean, looking at it from, you know, in the same frame we talked about where we're solely kind of watching the deterioration of the program that, you know, we grew up watching as like a powerhouse, you know, it feels like it's slipping, and you're like, man, if all of your chips are just riding on this TV contract negotiated by Mike Orezco, like, oof.
Well,
that's scary.
And look, they've got to be, you know, everybody's always, since the American was formed, everybody up this neck of the woods has poo-pooed it. Well, you look at the regular season records, UConn hasn't exactly been dominant in this league.
No.
And you can't blame that on the conference. And I thought of all the things Danny Hurley said at his introductory press conference, I thought his best answer came on somebody's question about recruiting in the American. And when he said, if I was at one of five or six other schools in the league, maybe it's a problem. But when you've got the UConn brand and, you know, UConn's history behind it, you won't have any trouble recruiting in the American. And I don't think he will. I think next year's class, I think he'll do, you know, it'll be a national class. This year's, because of the time, was more of a regional type of thing. But I think he'll get back to getting kids nationally to come here.
When, though? We, like, we're still on zero players for 2019.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, that's, you know, I wouldn't worry. I'd be surprised if they don't come up with a pretty good class for next year.
I hope so.
That would go a long way towards relieving some tension.
I just want, like, one big, like, we land one big recruit. Like, all right, here we go. I can see this working now.
You just need Precious Achiuwa, and then you'll be fine.
Yeah, if that happens, we're coming to the ACC. I don't know. It's going to be crazy.
All right, Joe, we have a few sort of lightning round questions for you.
Awesome.
We're going to ask you, we got, like, just a little list we put together of just random things over your career.
I mean, you guys actually planned for this? I'm very impressed.
Well,
I mean,
we have a guy in Virginia who puts together this.
Nice. I like it.
Can you tell us one, like, salty Jim Calhoun story? Did you and Jim Calhoun ever get in a shouting match with each other?
No.
No?
No. In fact, Coach has been great to me from the time he was hired and we did his TV show and taped it in Jorgensen for Channel 20 to now. I was with Coach. Well, we did a sports talk show on Channel 26 in New London in the old days. And we did a show outside at Ocean Beach during the summer. And Jim was our guest. It was our biggest show that we did. And so a bunch of Jim took us golfing. He paid for us at wherever. And we had like a foursome, which, as you know, you can't do. I think we were at Ellington. And somebody made a comment to Jim about it. And Jim goes, "Thanks. I know I can." He goes, "Thanks. I can count." He might have said one or two other words with that, but that's about as. Since I may be working very closely with Coach this winter, I'm gonna tell you that's as salty as I'm gonna get.
Okay, fair enough.
That's a good one. That's good. I like that.
Well, so you mentioned Calhoun's full tenure there. What was sort of what's the most rewarding season for you personally that you've broadcast?
I'd have to be 99, yeah. The first championship, beating Duke. In the final game, and then everything, you know, we got home and the parade was gigantic, and just, you know, that was a call that got played. You know, it was before the days where Westwood One stuffed all the local radio affiliates in a barrel when it came to NCAA tournament time and wouldn't let anybody play their calls. That final call of the Duke game got a lot of play. And I would just say that season, because it was the first time, you know, everybody wanted to castrate Jim and say he couldn't win the big one. They had come so close, you know, they should have beaten Florida. Donnie got hurt. Donnie missed the free throws. They played UCLA on the neutral floor in Oakland. They played North Carolina on the neutral floor in Greensboro. So, you know, to finally, the Gonzaga game was probably the most stressful game, I think, Jim's ever coached. And they won despite Khalid couldn't throw the ball in the ocean that game. It was like 0-for-12. So I would definitely say the 99 national championship game.
I've watched that game more times than any other basketball game in history. It's my favorite basketball game I've ever seen.
I don't doubt it.
After that season, they sold two cassettes of the full TIC show.
Yes.
And I had those, and I listened to those over and over again that summer.
Those could get you about $1.95 on eBay.
I would not sell.
You could just pay Russ directly, Joe.
Yes.
He'll give them to you.
Yeah. I'm sure I have them somewhere.
Oh, I bet.
Joe, when did you know that UConn was putting together a championship quality program?
I'd say 95. I would say the loss to going out to Oakland, beating Joe Smith in Maryland, and then the UCLA game. I mean, there was only one team that could beat UConn that year, and unfortunately, it was UCLA. Ray had a phenomenal game with 36 against them. I thought that was the point after that season, I thought UConn had a chance to be a dominant program. Did I ever think they'd get to the level of Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, Michigan State? No, in reality, I didn't. I think that story has not gotten enough play, that for that period of time, from say 95 to 2011, just how they were one of the blue bloods of college basketball.
Mm-hmm. Preach it.
People sleep on them.
I maintain that UCLA game too. If you look at it objectively, not as like a heartbreaking UConn loss, that is like the pinnacle of college basketball to me. That is a fun fucking game to watch.
That's the way it should be played.
It was like 102-96 or something. It was
Exactly. It was well officiated. The coaches let the kids play. They were great athletes. That should be what every NCAA tournament game in the Elite Eight on should be like.
Do you find college basketball less fun now? I mean, or, less enjoyable to watch?
No, not really. But you know what's funny? When you're not in it, when you've been as close, when you've done as many NCAA tournament games as I've been fortunate enough to do, when UConn's not in it, like the last 2 years, I didn't pay as much attention to it as I normally do. Like if I was home on Thursday not doing anything, well, I'd watch as many games as I could. But it's funny. When you're not in it, I don't think you have as much invested interest as you do when your team's playing well.
That's definitely true.
Oh, yeah. I watch a third as much college basketball now as I did even 5 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I probably don't watch as much. It's not because I'm watching the NBA, certainly. But, yeah, I would say that's a pretty accurate statement. I would go along with you. I think the game's just – there's too many fouls. There's too many, too many timeouts at the ends of the game and stuff. I just think it's changed. We don't get any games like that. We don't get as many games as that 95 champion West Regional game as we should.
Yeah. The closest I can think of since UConn went to the AAC were some of those Memphis games somewhere around 2014. Those were pretty fun. Memphis is the one team in this conference when they're good, I find fun to play against.
Yes, because it's up and down. It's not like Cincinnati where you go into a meat grinder.
Watch another Cincy game. No. I can't do it. I can't watch another 52-48 loss.
There will never be a worse game to broadcast than that 2017 AAC semifinal loss.
It was horrible to attend and watch.
I'm really mad about it.
I would like to ban Mick Cronin from the state of Connecticut if that were possible.
Yeah.
Bring it up on the political talk show, Joe.
Exactly.
Float the idea. We'll get legislation moving.
Whichever governor will ban him from the state, I will vote for that person.
Joe, what's your least favorite city to travel to and or worst arena to broadcast from?
I'll tell you what. The worst arena is the FedEx Forum in Memphis because you're jammed in along press row. I mean, you barely have enough room.
You got Dave Borges spilling his soda all over you.
To keep score. What's that?
You got Dave Borges like elbowing you and knocking your
soda
over.
They're in the second row behind us. It's just really tight and cramped. You can't even put a computer up for stats and stuff. It's just hideous. That's probably the only one. I mean, most of the places in the conference are pretty good. It's not like Pittsburgh, Syracuse, Notre Dame. Not to say. It was so much better in the old days,
Right.
But most of the places in the league are decent to broadcast from. I'm not a big fan of being next to the bench because you're just too crammed in. Mm-hmm. And the coach stands in front of you now.
Right.
I'd rather be across the way where the TVs are at midcourt, doing the game from there.
And what's your least favorite city to travel to?
It's hard to get to G Vegas. You got to go to Raleigh and drive, because normally the charter's smaller. That's what the locals call it. Locals call it G Vegas.
Wait, what? That is what? So sad.
Why?
Greenville. Why? Just for fun, because they know who they're cool, and they know it's not like the most glamorous spot on earth. It's funny though. We always talk like that. I would guarantee you that Storrs, Connecticut, is at the top of a lot of opposing teams' lists as the least favorite place to come.
Yeah, but that's because they're from shitholes like Tulsa. I don't care.
I think if you're looking at it from the other way, sometimes you can see there. You can see the thing. But every city is, every city's different. I mean, Tulsa's Tulsa. It just takes a while to get out there. Dallas is fun. Houston's, okay. I would have liked to have seen how that arena is going to look when they renovate it. Same with Cincinnati with the Fifth Third Arena. Tampa's good. Orlando's good. I got pickpocketed a few years ago in New Orleans.
Did you?
On New Year's Eve. So that's at the bottom of my list.
Cool. Rude.
Yeah. Well, we were there. We were there to play on January 2nd, and we had played before that. I forget where. So we were in New Orleans for New Year's Eve. So like four of us said, let's go to Bourbon Street because there won't be anybody there. and the thing that pissed me off was I had my wallet in my front pocket. Some guy jostled me, and before I knew it, my wallet was gone.
Oh. All right, load up the bus. We're going to New Orleans. We're going to find this guy.
Yeah. Put him on the list.
We're getting your wallet back.
Add it to the grievance episode.
Joe, do you have a favorite place you've broadcasted from, or like a favorite moment where you're like, yep, this is the coolest?
Madison Square Garden, the first time, having grown up as a Knicks fan, was really cool. Of course, it was an 8-9 game between UConn and Boston College, played before maybe 2,000 people. And UConn got spanked. But it was still the Garden. The Garden's become a tough place to broadcast from, because if you're not courtside, where they put the NBA radio is way up top. You're behind plexiglass. You're away from everything. Yeah, the Garden's not a great place to do games from if you're not courtside.
Hmm. What about your favorite opposing coach?
Oh, Jay Wright.
That's really funny, only because, all right, so a friend of ours asked us to ask that question and then put in parentheses, he's going to say Jay Wright.
Jay Wright's great. Jay Wright's very friendly. Mike Bray is really nice to us. Larry Brown was great. There are more great coaches than not great coaches. They tend to get it. Jay Wright is far and away number one.
Anyone you want to shit talk while we have you here?
No, not really.
Yeah.
No.
How about this?
What if you sit there quietly while I shit talk Rick Pitino real quick?
Hey, I was going to say something there. I was going to say something that I would have texted you and said, could you please
take that out? Yeah.
Yeah, I'll hold off.
My only Pitino memory was during one of the Louisville games when he wouldn't come in to do a press conference and made people go wait outside the running bus to interview him. That was the only Pitino story I had. But.
He seems like a very cool dude. Totally cool and normal guy.
Wow.
Pitino?
Yeah.
We're talking Rick, not Richard, right?
Is right. Richard cool? Like, I feel like he's just...
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you.
He just seems like an awkward version of his dad.
But you
also
know what?
Not that good.
Probably. He probably is. He probably is.
That's me. I'm an awkward version of my dad.
Aren't we all deep down? All right, Joe. $1 million question. What's your favorite call or some of your favorite calls? You mentioned the 99 game. What else we got?
99 championship game. Andre Dixon's touchdown at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Kemba shot.
Of course.
Against,
yes. That's my favorite.
Against Pittsburgh. Talik shot in the old
also against
championship
Pittsburgh.
Game against Pittsburgh. Bird at the buzzer on the women's side.
Yes, that's such a good game.
Hockey overtime game this year at home against BC was great.
Ooh.
You know, was it BC or BU? I don't remember. BU. You know, I mean, I was lucky. I had a lot. You know, Taggart's field goal against South Florida that kicked them into the Fiesta Bowl. You know, I was really, you know, I was really lucky. In 26 years, I think I was there at the golden time.
For sure, absolutely.
Things were at their best, and I frankly don't know if they were going to get back to that level.
We'll always have.
Yeah, that's sad. It's very sad, but you're absolutely right.
Try not to think about it.
And it's just, you know, and I think what you were saying before, Ty, about how like all of the things have like individually deteriorated, you know, like the coach leaves and the league falls apart and we're losing all the time now. And then Joe leaves and we lost the logo. It's all, you know. The
current logo is better. That's an upgrade.
Russell, will slap you through the screen.
Wow.
There are some people in this podcast who have some very bad opinions, Joe. And ask Meacham how he feels about macaroni and cheese.
Hold on.
It's not good.
Peter, everything you listed would be a whole lot more bearable if the team was good, except for maybe losing Joe. But like everything else, like I'd be able to.
Well, the league too. Like, I mean,
yes,
even if we were still as good as we'd ever been, it still wouldn't be as fun to be.
It wouldn't be as fun, but I would be. It would be bearable. I would still enjoy it a lot more.
Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have to take shit from Memphis fans twice a year.
Yeah.
And Tulsa fans. I had to take shit from Tulsa fans.
There are Tulsa fans.
Both of them.
Yeah.
ECF fans.
Yeah.
Honestly. Tulsa having some nerve. You're Tulsa. Talking to me. Not okay.
Well, it's like, on one hand, like, they have no notable athletic success. Two, they're in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
This is my point. This is what I'm saying.
Like, if you were to start naming American cities, like, that's the last one I think I would pick to live in. Except for maybe Biloxi.
Hey, Peter,
it's funny. People say Biloxi. I was talking with somebody about Biloxi on Saturday, and they say that's not as bad as you think it is.
All right, well, I've never been there.
It's bad news for Tulsa.
It's like it's bad. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
You can gamble in Biloxi now.
Yes.
I feel like going to Biloxi was always a gamble.
That's right. Hey, Joe, you know what we should ask you about while you're on? Dan Orlovsky just got a gig with ESPN to do some broadcasting. You did a little bit of work with him in the recent past, right?
He's the next rock star
in
college football.
Big things coming from Danny?
He was terrific with us. He did the Cincinnati game when we left Wayne. Wayne had to stay in Portland because that was a whole Thanksgiving thing in case planes were screwed up and stuff. And he did the color on the women's game with Bobby at Oregon. Danny's going to be great. He's really developed. He's had a terrific winter breaking down quarterbacks and stuff. He had a number of offers. And, you know, he's going to be doing Friday night games on ESPN, studio stuff. He's going to do some NFL stuff as well. He's really the next big star, I think. And we're biased saying that because he's Shelton's Dan Orlovsky. And, you know, I like to think I had a little something with his development, but not much because he's a natural. He's going to be great.
He's been really impressive. I've been listening to a lot of his stuff leading up to the draft, and I just think he's really talented at breaking things down and, like, giving you a perspective that you're not getting from other places and explaining it in really accessible ways.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm excited to, and it can't hurt to have a guy who like reps UConn as well and as hard as Dano does out in Bristol.
Exactly. No question, Meg.
The more alumni getting jobs, the better.
That's all I'm saying. Prominent UConn alumni on ESPN, it's good. That's all I'm saying.
Well, he's got it now that Jim took a different job. Got to have one.
Yes, that's very true.
Joe, do you have any interest in calling St. Joe's games?
There might be some. You might hear some basketball this winter on WTIC.
And I so know. Today we announced that Dimeback.com is a St. Joe's fan. Yeah. Right. That's really it. If it's Jim and Joe, I'm there.
True, actually.
I don't know how I'm going to deal with no longer being the most famous Division III basketball broadcaster from attack.com. That was the top line of my resume.
You'll still have NYU volleyball, Russ.
And they'll never take that away from you.
I wish they would. I would much rather just do basketball and baseball. And softball. I like doing softball, too.
Joe, who's the best player in UConn basketball history?
Ray.
Is it?
Ray Allen. Yeah. Ray. I would say Ray and Ray, Rip, one and two. Karan's right up there, even though he was only there for 2 years.
Kemba?
Yeah, and look, I mean, really the best player in history might have been Toby Kimball, to be honest with you. Tony Hansen was phenomenal. People tend to think there wasn't UConn basketball before Jim. And that doesn't do justice to the Hugh Greer and D. Rowe and Don Perno teams. But I would say Ray's one, Rip's two.
You ever seen a picture of Art Quimby and Travis Knight next to each other? They look identical.
Do they really?
They look identical.
Well, except Art Quimby's about a half foot shorter than Travis.
That's true.
They have the same face. It's actually sort of terrifying.
And apparently Travis had like a 1950s haircut in 1995.
I've never looked at it that closely. Travis has no haircut now. No. So
last time I saw Travis Knight, he had hair down to like his middle of his back.
That moss has grown. So,
Joe, are you going to the Calhoun charity game?
I will be there. I will be working it like I have in the past.
Going to do the MC?
I'll do the as far as unless somebody knows something I don't know, I'm supposed to do that, and then the golf dinner after the event on Monday.
Nice.
But another radio station has taken over broadcasting live from the event on Monday. So
got it.
Other than Dano, who's your favorite UConn football player to cover?
Just because of his name. Well, I can't. I was going to say Carl Bond because I love saying Bond. Carl Bond. Lutris was great. I love Scott Lutris. He was terrific. Wilbur Gilliard, running back in the 90s, was a really good smash. Was a really good player. I guess Shane Stafford would be up there too. Really liked covering him. And then I've always, because the kickers were always so good on the talk show, I always liked talking to the kick squad. When we had the first one we did was Desi and Tony Chirivino. And I think I drank for an hour after that. They were hysterical. And ever since then, the kick squads had kind of a image to live up to. And they always have. They've always been great and fun kids to talk to.
Was one of them the Kentucky Hammer? Who was the Kentucky Hammer?
Desi Cullen.
That was Desi. Okay, yeah.
That was Desi, yeah.
What was the best home game you covered? Because obviously Notre Dame was on the road, the South Florida Taggart game was on the road.
I guess. You know what? I mean, this is going to – well, I like the Pittsburgh game that they won in double overtime where DJ scored and then he threw the ball out of the end zone.
Yeah, that was awesome.
After that, I like that one. I like the 1AA playoff game against Hampton at Memorial in 98 was kind of fun. First game at Rentschler against Indiana because it was so novel. And then the Baylor game. When they beat Robert Griffin, and then Robert Griffin said it was the noisiest stadium he'd ever been in. I thought those were all pretty much marquee games.
When you were doing like that,
he wanted to see a game at Memorial Stadium, and he never got the chance, and he's really sad about it.
I am very sad. I used to just sit in the stadium, like, waiting for a game to happen.
but the rent was already open.
Right, yeah. It was 2007.
Joe, when you were doing those games in the rent in like 2006 and every game had 40,000 people in it, I mean, did you think it was going to last forever? You know what I mean?
I did. Yeah. I did. I mean, I didn't factor in the impact because, look, nobody thought Randy was going to stay forever. UConn is not, other than Gino and Jimmy Penders, Ray Reed, UConn now has changed. As far as, destiny, it might still be a destination school, but people aren't going to spend their whole careers here.
Mm-hmm.
But I was surprised at how quickly things deteriorated. You know, look, 11-12, they were 5-7. They were playing for bowl bid in the last game of the year, and they lost both times to Cincinnati. And then when they started off so badly in 13 and Paul got fired and TJ Weiss took over, that was the start. And then the next 3 years, we don't really have to discuss because there's no reason to. I felt bad for the kids those years, you know, and what they did to Donovan Williams was criminal. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely criminal.
I agree.
Did you know from the start that that wasn't going to work out?
Diaco?
Yeah.
Well,
because we were drinking the Kool-Aid for a long time.
Like a year and a half.
Yeah.
I think at the introductory press conference, Wayne and I left and we kind of looked at each other and said, then he was just, I mean, look, I never, from the first time I talked to him, one-on-one, and he totally disrespected me for half an hour.
Oh,
I didn't have a good feeling about the guy, you know, right through the famous Balto story, at the coach's show like his fourth or fifth coach's show in 2014, you know, and then he had the decent year. They went to a bowl game. They got beat at the Trop. But I kind of bought the Kool-Aid for the next year. I thought, oh, they'll be fine. They'll be 7-5. Well, stupid was I, right?
And all of us.
Stupid or more stupid.
And you know what I think it was? I think for all of us, it was just wishful thinking. We hoped it was going to turn back to the way it was, and it went 180 degrees different.
Some idiot on a dimeback.com wrote that Bob Diaco was going to save UConn football. I don't know who that was.
I don't know.
Could have been anyone.
We didn't delete that.
Did all of you write that?
just Kevin, but
just
may have.
I had support.
All had those moments.
I had support.
It's all right, Kevin. Kevin, here's the thing: you weren't alone. You know, because for a long time, people thought he was so funny, and you know, the press conferences were interesting, and then all of a sudden, it hit people.
He's just crazy.
He's crazy. Yes. Right. He's batshit crazy. And then when the results started going in the opposite direction, then it wasn't so funny anymore.
No. Now it's funny.
It was really funny watching him at Nebraska for a season. Like, I enjoyed that a lot.
Hate him.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Nebraska fans online want to throw that guy down a well.
It was like watching myself in a mirror a year ahead of time. It was like how excited they were when he got there. It's like, oh, you poor people.
Do you remember trying to warn them on Twitter?
I do.
I remember I spent a day trying to do that, and it was a waste of time.
Don't do it, guys. We know how this ends. And yet.
Joe, I'm sorry. I don't know the famous coaches show story.
All right. So we did the coaches show the first year at the Wooden Tap in Vernon.
Mm-hmm. It was
6-7. But the problem was he practiced Thursdays till 5:45, which made getting to the Wooden Tap at 6 o'clock from stores an impossibility.
Yep.
So the first coaches show, he was 40 minutes late. And if Mike Enright hadn't been there, it would have been me doing a monologue for 40 minutes. The next week, he was like 25 late. Then he was 20 late. So, look, I'm not going to lie to you. I kind of had the red ass that he's coming in late all the time. But I don't want to rock the boat, so I don't say anything. So about week 5, they're 1-4, 1-5, I think. And you could see the season was going to be hit. It was going to be hideous. But he always kept talking about, you know, remember that was the year that he had the 3 exhibition games to start the season? Remember that, Jim?
Yeah.
I'm going to charge you full price. We're calling these exhibition games. So they're like 1-4, 1-5. So we're doing the coach's show, and he was always talking about how much better they were getting. So I said to him, I said, well, coach, I said, the fans can understand that you know, the team is showing signs of improvement. But how do you keep the player's spirits up when there's no discernible sign of that on the scoreboard? So he said, that's a good question. And as soon as he said that, I said, you're fucked, to myself. He goes, who's the most famous Husky? So my brain is rattling at 130 miles an hour, like I'm on a NASCAR circuit. I'm thinking Ray. I'm thinking Rebecca. I'm thinking Jim. I'm thinking Gino. And it's live radio. So I don't want this to go any longer than it has. So I said, who is it, coach? And he said,
I see where this is going.
And he said, Balto. Now, I was not familiar with Balto because I never had kids.
Right? I was a kid when that came out. So that.
Right. So when he said Balto, my phone was in my pocket and it begins to vibrate because my friends are all texting me saying, what the hell's going on? So I said, I'm not familiar with Balto, coach. So he lapses into the story about Balto being a Siberian Husky who rescued people on the Bering Straits with, you know, serum and this and that. And I can feel my head spinning. So after about a minute of that, he gets to, and this is live 50,000 watt radio, remind you.
Yep.
He goes, he said, but even Balto, when he was a lovable little puppy, had issues. And we're kind of like a young Balto. And there were nights as a puppy that Balto would be on his parents' linoleum and put down big steamers. We can't put down any more big steamers. At this point, I feel like my phone is actually beginning to ring with people getting in touch with me. And I said, all right, coach, no more big steamers. Let's go to a break. Well, that story became legend. And because of that, I would never have a cocktail before I did a live show or when I did TV, because all you'd have to do is have one person see you putting down a drink and then hear you make a mistake on a word. And you know how it is on social media. Yeah. Joe D was drinking, right? Yeah. Joe D was drunk. Well, I'll let you in on a little secret. After that episode of the Bob Diaco Coaches Show, at 5:30 every week on Thursday, I would knock down a Captain Morgan and Diet Coke. So I would be ready.
Reasonable.
That's the only course of action.
We all drank our way through the rest of those Diaco years, so I don't blame you.
Yep.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah, I would have one at 11:50 a.m. every Saturday morning so I could gear up to watch Bob Diaco's team play
even
football.
Even in the offseason.
It was interesting, put it that way.
Wow.
How mad would he have been if you had said White Fang?
You know what? My brain wasn't – I'll be honest. My brain wasn't thinking that way right then.
Yeah, but it would have been a great – like if I were going to write that scene for TV, that's where we would go, I think.
Maybe.
I think your brain wasn't working like that because you have a normal brain.
I hope so. I hope so.
See, I mean, like, when you call it the Balto story, even when you asked that question, it still took me a second to realize that's where he was going with it.
Yeah. Well, that's where it went.
Man.
God, he was truly deranged. Like, and the whole thing with the trophy, and we were at the time, we're like, this is weird, right? This seems weird, but whatever. They're having fun with it, I guess. And then it became really embarrassing instead.
Yeah. Well,
it's still really embarrassing.
It's still really embarrassing, you know? I mean, and so to open this year with UCF, don't you think whichever one of the ESPN family of networks does the game is going to bring
talk about it. Oh,
trophy?
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. We're trying to find it.
Yeah, Joe, do you know where I can buy the conflict trophy?
I believe I saw it on eBay for $298.
So, I will pay that.
There's no way that's worth twice with the WTIC 1999 championship game broadcast.
No, I would agree. I would agree, Russell.
All right, Joe. Well, it's getting late, so we'll let you go. But
yeah, somebody's got to be up in 5 hours.
Yeah, I was going to say. God. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. Everyone can tune in. What time does your broadcast start with Ray?
My first sportscast is at about 5:17 a.m.
My goodness.
Is there like a West Coast airing that I
can catch? Yeah, no. Sorry. I wish.
So everyone can get up nice and early with you and tune into WTIC and listen to Joe on 1080 in the morning. And Joe, best of luck. Thanks for everything you did for UConn sports over the last three decades. And you know, we've been a huge part of all of our fandoms following this the the Huskies for so long, and we appreciate you taking the time and all the work you put in over the years.
Well, thank you guys, and I really appreciate, you know, people like you, and you know, you have fun, and you treat the kids with respect, and you know, that's the main thing. And I just think you guys do a great job, and I'm happy to have been a guest. And anytime you want to invite me back, except like in the next 15 years or so, I'd be happy to come.
Fair enough. All right. So you heard it first. 15 years from now, Joe D officially takes over as the permanent co-host of the Time Back Podcast.
All right, fellas. All right, Meg, Joe. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Bye-bye.